Hello. Hello. Hello, and welcome to The Librarian Is In, the New York Public Library's podcast about books, culture, and what to read next. I'm Frank.
And I'm Crystal.
And we have a guest. Can you hear it?
I hear it. Have you named them?
Well, I'm asking you. Have I named them? If anyone can hear that, it's a cricket outside. I opened the window because it's warm. And we have crickets outside the library. And I can hear it. It's a great metaphor for the podcast, Crystal. Hi, everybody. We're The Librarian Is In. Crickets. Oh, that's terrible. It can't possibly be so. We're so popular around the world. Yeah, but if it gets on your nerves, I'll close the window.
No, it's fine. My uncle had a pet cricket.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think in China, they keep them in these like little boxes as pets. It's kind of odd.
Carry it around with him?
I don't know. It was when I visited like years and years ago and he showed it to me and I was just like, oh, okay. And then I did the whole like art project around it. So.
In school?
Yeah, when I went to when I did my thesis, I constructed all of these like little wooden containers that had these brass crickets in it, and the insides of the containers were like printed with like kind of like furniture or something, and they had the glass. I don't know. It was really weird, but I think it was just sort of was going through something, and I made a bunch of them.
You gave the crickets furniture.
It was silk screened like white on wood, and it was supposed to mimic, you know how like if you have a painting on wallpaper and it fades and then you move the painting and that still kind of retains its full color. So it was kind of the remnants of furniture, and furniture wasn't actually there. Yeah, I don't know.
Very art school.
Very art school, which may be related to this topic. Really? I won't say anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have crickets, so hopefully it won't drive anyone nuts. We're still under construction, Jefferson Market. Everybody knows that, I guess. And we have no air conditioning, and I'm still coming in here and doing it. Sort of like a character in the book I'm going to discuss.
Oh, interesting.
It's haunting the place. I can't let go. See, I can't let go. I'm tenacious. I can't, even though we've been closed for so long. So yeah, you were alluded to the books we read, which we decided to independently of the other read a book that we could consider required reading for a high school book list, or maybe freshman year college, or a college book list, or a book list book that students have to read over the summer in preparation for school, or have to read during the school year. Something that would make us maybe go back in time to a book we had read and revisit it, wink, wink, or read something new that we have seen on lists our whole librarian career. And then, oh, yes, and then give each other, because I love the guessing game, give each other a, you know, a paragraph from the books to see first.
I forgot about that part.
Crystal.
Oh, I forgot about that part. Hold on.
I don't like it. I knew you'd forget that part, and that's the part I've been looking forward to.
Okay.
But I have to admit that
I have it on my phone. Don't worry. I got it.
A quote I'm going to do, even though I did this morning hustle to sort of figure one out, but I was sort of late on that game too, but I didn't forget. I have to recover because I'm very disappointed.
And we were trying to pick the same book secretly. I tried to really inhabit.
Oh, maybe.
I tried to really inhabit you, Frank, and tried to find a book. But then I got to the point where I was like, honestly, I feel like any book could be a school reading book. And I gave up. So I did something that I don't think you've read.
I mean, I guess technically any book could. But what I meant when I suggested this, and I hope you followed orders, even though you haven't so far.
You know I don't follow orders.
I'm so bossy today. that you picked a book that everyone might recognize. Oh, of course, that's a book I should have read or had to read in school. So
no, I didn't do that.
That's not funny. You're pissing me off.
I did a book that I feel like is a great representation of what school is and would be great for teen readers to read in preparation for going back to school.
See, the reason why I'm most upset is that if that precludes the possibility of me guessing it, because if it was something from the pool of like, oh, we were all aware of this is in the required reading list or the book list, I had a chance.
No, now, but we did say we were going to include
that you want to
suggest. It's not obscure. It's recent.
And you say, therefore, it's obscure to me.
I mean, it might even be on the best books for teens list in previous. No, we did say books that we wish could had been on those lists in the past because, you know, I feel like some of the books I grew up reading were, to be honest, like not really diverse. And there's so many more options that we have now that I think is really great. Okay, stop making faces, Frank.
Wow. All right. All right. I can't argue with your argument. And I maybe sort of remember us discussing books that that might be
roll back the tape. Do we not keep the recordings from right before we start?
No. But all right, then let me ask you this just for my own personal joy, which you seem hell-bent on destroying. What is one of the books that you thought of that when you were thinking about what Frank might read?
I was thinking of Kate Chopin's The Awakening not because of the whole, like, what happens to her. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of the books that you read are very thoughtful and introspective, right? And I don't think that I'm necessarily that kind of a reader. And I do really admire that about you, Frank.
Oh.
and be able to, like...
You made me so angry, and now you're doing
pulling you back in.
No, I want. You're like, you're so fabulous, Frank, and so thoughtful and so beautiful too, physically as well as mentally.
No, but I think the way that you talk about books, there's so much like introspection going on that I really appreciate. That I feel like that's not something that I can necessarily do or do well. And for me, I talk about like plot, like the really standard things of like how I sell a book to teenagers and stuff. And so I was thinking about that one as something that where. I wouldn't say necessarily like a lot of things happen in it, except for like the one big thing, but there's a lot of kind of internal questioning, you know? And I think when you read that book, there can be a lot of internal questioning as well. And so I was like, maybe that one. But then I was like, there's just too many choices. I don't know where Frank is going with this. And so I just chose the book that I enjoyed.
All right. Well, you brought me down from the ceiling. Flattery will get you everywhere. Yeah. Or when you just talk about me in a very thoughtful, loving way. No, still a little mad. Could you pick a quote? Now I don't care. I'm never going to get it.
I mean, I just gave you a clue. I said it was on the best books for teens list. Do you not follow that list, Frank?
I have it memorized.
Wow.
I'm never going to get it.
But now I'm insulted.
Boy. This is a cantanker. Oh, speaking of insulted.
Okay.
This is actually, quite a segue. Mm-hmm. This is actually my, why did I say speaking of insulted? This is actually my 200th episode.
Oh, we should have had like a cake.
Well, somebody should have maybe known that it was my 200th episode besides
me. Oh, I don't look at me. I'm looking at Chrissy's blank screen.
Our producer. Yeah, I know. You're the third co-host, by the way. She's giving a what, me, huh? I don't know. Thanks, everybody. It's like forgetting my birthday because my real birthday is not as important as my podcast birthday. But anyway.
Truly, right?
Well, this podcast is not starting well. But we shall persevere, and maybe this will be my 200th and final.
No.
I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't even have said anything, but I expect a gift in the mail, and administration should also duly praise me for bringing the greater glory to New York Public Library. Oh my God, this is such a
terrible. That is a lot. That's a lot of episodes, I have to say. 200.
Yeah, 2015.
How do you feel? Celebratory? Regretful?
I mean, I hesitate I don't know. One doesn't want to not jokingly toot one's horn or to say nice things about oneself, except in a self-deprecating, funny way. And I think that's the way to go. But to be honest, it's like if the audience likes me and wants me to stay, that's one thing. I hope so. But let me know if you want me to leave. It brings me a lot of joy just to look forward to talking about a book that I've read or hear about a book you've read. It's like a bright spot in my humdrum week. I mean, not my humdrum week, but like, I mean, actually, especially through the pandemic and the mm-hmm. shutdown, like with Rhonda, that was an interesting experience having to do that. Because Rhonda and I barely met in person. It was a couple mm-hmm. of times, and then March 2020, everything shut down. So most of our time together was during that time, and I look back on that. Now I look back very fondly. That was really like a moment of solace and some mm-hmm. moment of love, really. Mm-hmm. And of course, Gwen, the bedazzling star of yesteryear, who's moved on to mm-hmm. more local library to her home. And now,
we still hear from her.
And now you, I guess. And now, yeah, what's your name again? Crystal?
That's not my real name, by the way. But anyways.
Oh, I know. What'd you say?
I was saying Gwen that we still hear from. But I was going to say, like, you know, 200 episodes, that does require a lot of discipline. And that's pretty awesome.
Actually, that's funny that you say that, because, like, we were talking a bit before this. Like, I wish I had more discipline, and maybe listeners wish I did too. Maybe I'll obtain it. Maybe one can't change. Is that at the beginning of the podcast, it was so sort of overwhelming and a little scary mm-hmm. and daunting to present for the New York Public Library. I just said, it has to be fun. I'm going to be me. I'm going to go on. I'm just mm-hmm. going to talk about books. And if they don't want me to do it anymore, that's fine. I just won't do it. I won't take it seriously. I won't take it personally. It's fine. And I never wanted it to not be fun or just an expression of my personality and my reading.
Yeah.
So, but as time goes on, sometimes I feel like I really want to present this book in a coherent. I always am saying in the podcast, I make no sense. I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But I always think I'm going to prepare. I'm going to do this. And I can't. It's like doing like a paper for school. Like, some people have different habits. I always wrote last minute, like the night before. So mm-hmm. usually the night before a podcast, I'm like, well, got to crack to it and write those notes and do a flow chart and make it presentable. And then I just dawdle. Mm-hmm. And then the morning of, I sort of read over some notes I took, and I'm just like, I'm just going to wing it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It might be now that I said this out loud, it might be a good assignment for myself to just try it once again. I don't know. Maybe I just don't want it to seem like, quote, work. Working in the doesn't feel like work to me.
Yeah.
Like, and I think of work.
And I think we're also just approaching this from the POV, like a real like reader, you know, and not like somebody who is very experienced, like book presentation, etc. And I think I like that kind of somewhat like uncertainty, because I think our thoughts are constantly changing about mm-hmm. these books. And I think there is something about having to read a book for these podcasts on this like daily schedule and wanting it to be fresh enough so it's like still in our heads. But then having enough time to really like prepare for it too, compared to a book that we've read like 5 years ago or something, and trying to find that balance, it can be really tricky. And I've definitely done things where I read a book specifically for this podcast, but then once I finish it, I'm like, this book is great. I have nothing to talk about. This book is terrible. I have nothing, you know, like, and then having to sort of re-navigate maybe like another book or something, it'd be tough. But I do admire your like dedication to this for 200 episodes.
Well, I find like it's a pleasure. And guess what? The crickets stopped.
Oh, the crickets loving this conversation.
The cricket is all like, Frank, we're going to be quiet for you because we love you. We love, I cannot sing. I will always love you. I won't even
go there. It's a moment of silence to commemorate the 200 episodes from the cricket, the respect.
They're actually going out and getting me a present, which no one else did. So thanks, crickets. So you're all right. You've been darling to me. I feel like an arrogant, pompous booby right now. I hope I haven't come off that way. anyway, so we have books, darling.
My quote. Okay, go ahead.
I'm not gonna bring my grievances up again. I was gonna say I have my book and I did my assignment correctly, even though I guess you did. All right, shut up. Get up. Let go.
I need it in writing.
It's a classic
thing. Assignments.
You did it organically. You had a thought process. You actually did think of mm-hmm. Kate Shannon Awakening, which is brilliant. So I'm fine. What am I? It's so interesting. I just wanted to get the guessing game. It's all about ego, honey. It's just like, right. It's just about me wanting to get the guessing game. And now I'm not. If it's a new YA book, there is no way. Or maybe I will.
Well, you're on the computer. You can pull up the best books for
teens. No, I don't do that. Right. As you know,
actually, is this book on
the
best
books? Here's my notes in a book. So I don't do computers like that. Anyway, let's crack to it, kid.
Wait, hold on. Let me just check and make sure this is actually on the best books for teens list.
Uh-huh.
I had a moment where I was like, maybe I argued for this book and it never made it. Public library.
She talks the talk, but she doesn't know how to walk the walk. The crystal.
Oh, no. No, it's there. It's there. Here, I'll send you the link.
No, I'm not. No.
Of just the 2020 list. It's in the book finder. No, there's a chat function here.
I don't want the
library. There you go. Right, okay. Now. So I'm just helping.
All right, fine.
Okay.
You're being a librarian. Mm-hmm. You want to just dive into it, baby?
Okay. Are you going to be really mad if I guess yours and you don't guess mine?
No, not anymore. I think I've worked through it. Stop bringing
it up. Okay, good.
or you want me to start so we can get mine over with? I always start. You go.
Okay. Do you want hints? I'm going to read you
one. Give me the quote. I'll ask you questions. Stop
pulling
up my last nerve crystal, Jen. we're having a thorny moment here. All right.
Okay, this is the quote that I have that I picked in the last 5 minutes. I guess. I'll just have to work until you can't tell the difference between me and a genius.
Oh, you're just giving me a quote. I have like
that's what you asked for.
I guess you weren't really around during the guessing game years. All right. All right, say it again.
I guess I'll just have to work until you can't tell the difference between me and a genius. Now, here's a hint.
All right. I don't want a hint.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
When we used to do it with Gwen, the best podcast host. Woo! I'm kidding.
I accept that.
He is a nerdist legend. And darling Rhonda. All right. We used to ask people to read a quote, a passage, and then we would ask them crazy questions because, of course, we wouldn't get it right away usually. And then we would ask, and then until it got so blatant. So let me ask you a question.
Okay.
This should have gone through the ground rules. I'm not very good at that. Now I forgot the quote. See, this is the kind of question I'd ask. Who is the person talking to? They're saying I'm not a genius, so I guess I'll just have to work harder. Is that the quote?
I feel like any answer that I respond with is gonna. It's a hint. The person's talking to the reader.
Oh, interesting. So it's a first person narrative.
Yes.
Which my book is as well.
Kind of.
Maybe this is more intrigue. See, you never know where you find intrigue. Is the quote, I may not be a genius, but I might have to work harder? Am I getting that correctly?
I'll just have to work until you can't tell the difference between me and a genius.
Meaning they're trying to prove something to the reader.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're trying to say I'm not there yet, but I'm hoping to be and come on a journey with me. I mean, I don't know the book. There's no way.
That's a great summation of it, I would say.
Is there a terrible turning point or a terrible event that this book circles around in some ways? As a lot of YA books do.
No, not in like the traditional YA way. And it is a YA book. That was a hint.
Oh, I knew that. One of the best books of teens. I have a feeling it's a male writer.
Actually, I don't think so, but let me double check.
You don't think so? Didn't you read the book?
No. Yes, I did read the book.
You talk about
the writer versus the protagonist, right?
The author of the book.
The author is not male.
Oh, and the protagonist?
Yes, is male.
So it's a so-called female identifying author writing about a male character as a first-person narrator.
Yes.
Why are you unsure of this?
I don't know. It's because you're looking so intensely at me. It's making me nervous. Like I'm being interrogated.
I guess after 200 episodes, I'm intimidating. Especially today, I'm so grand. So there isn't a terrible, so is it more of a sort of picaresque, lighthearted romp-ish through a kid's life? Is it a young child? Is it a teenager or college age?
It's a teen who's approaching college, and it doesn't have like a deeply like dramatic horrible events, but I would say the protagonist encounters a series of failures.
And do they change by the end in terms of how they were at the beginning?
Yeah, I would say so.
It's my book too. All right. Now I'm curious and confused. Oh, I'm intimidating you. I was going to say why you were here the author. I guess I'm just, it's my physical beauty that you're really blown back by. So that's just, if you say that, then I'll be fine again. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. So tell me, please, madame.
So you were never going to guess it because it's a manga. It's called Blue Period. So the one that made the list was in 2020, was volume one. And so I think last week, recently, I read volume three, which is the most recent one. So this is like published by Kodansha, and it as a manga, it's released in Japan. It was in 2017. It got translated and it got released in the US like last year. It's a continuing series. And essentially the story is about this boy named Yatora Yaguchi, who's this charming like high school kid. He has like lots of friends. He's kind of known as a slacker or delinquent. But the thing that is kind of different about him is that he actually has really good grades in a really high class ranking, to the point where his friends don't even think that he's doing it himself, and they think that he's cheating. And his response is like, yeah, okay, I'm cheating by having the smartest kid in class tutor me. That's my cheating, right? But he's a very hard worker. He's very driven to meet these goals and to attend college. And then one day he enters this room where like the art club usually meets and sees this like beautiful painting. And because he sees this beautiful painting, there's just like desire or passion to make art that's awakened inside of him. And he isn't a good artist, right? But he wants to be a good artist, and he wants to go to, I think, Tokyo University of the Arts, if I have named that correctly, which is where the author attended school. And it's a very like competitive art school. And so the manga volumes kind of go through his journey to become a good artist, and constantly kind of experiencing failure, seeing these like very talented artists around him and having to put into that work so that he can become better. And I thought this was like a really good book for kind of the high school age set, because there's so much in it that talks about maybe the importance of learning and how like you can kind of achieve your dreams. And I liked this book compared to a lot of other YA books, because I've read several where you have the chosen one, right? Where because of some natural ability within a young person, they are meant for grand things. But I don't think he is somebody who has this like natural artistic ability. He has to work really hard for that. And I think that's really wonderful. Let's see.
So interesting, because I read a very similar book, you could say. And
I could tell by the waving arms.
I know, I waved. I was like, whoa, meant for grand things. Would you say meant for grand things, but maybe not have the skills together?
Well, like the chosen one trope in YA novels, right, where they have this kind of natural ability that gets unearthed or whatever. And I don't think, in my estimation of Yatora, he is somebody who is really a hard worker and has to I think, in order to succeed. And I think that's a really important lesson for young kids to have. It's a difficult lesson, right? That you have to fail to get to the point where you can succeed. And even I think in volume three, he gets to the point where he does like, it starts to click for him, right? He is challenged to do this, like, I think it's called like a F100 painting, which is like a very large scale painting. And he starts to kind of understand how to utilize the things that he's learning to communicate like a certain concept, and he does it, and he gets a really great response, right? And then he does another painting after it, and then the teacher's response is really lackluster. And when he asks about it, she's like, well, you're just recycling your previous work, right? You have to keep developing. And so it's like he gets a little bump, and then it goes down again, but he never gives up, you know? And I really appreciate that about this title.
Well, does he ever question himself?
Oh, constantly.
Okay.
I think constantly, and also when he is looking at his other classmates and their artwork. And I will say this is the other thing about this manga. Like, for people who are familiar with, like, manga, and I'm not that much. Like, I think I'm relatively new. There's other colleagues who are very experienced in manga and can teach us, like, many, many things. But my understanding of manga is generally, like, the way it's produced, it's a little bit more simplified so that you can produce the artwork very quickly. And that's why you see things with, like, Naruto with, like, volume 60 or whatever. And the output is very quick. But within that, and they're generally black and white, except I have seen some that are, like, in color, like Solo Leveling, which came out recently. But within that, there's like a huge range of art styles, right? You have the Witch Hat Atelier and Drifting Dragons, super detailed. And you have like, if you've ever, I recommend this book for people. It's called like Little Miss P, which is about like a period basically that shows up in your doorway. Like, no.
Oh, period.
The drawings are super simplified, and like the opening scene is a woman who opens the door, and it's this like huge Muppet creature at the door that's like, "Hello, I am your period."
Oh, okay.
And then throughout the book, she's like punching the woman in the stomach and stuff, and I'm just like, "Yes, true, very true." Oh. But that's like the two kind of ends, in my opinion, of sort of the art style. This one's sort of like in the more detailed end, and the artist,
Blue Period,
and the artist, I think, was really smart about having essentially like guest artists come in and do the actual paintings.
I love it.
Of the different classmates. So their art styles are really distinctive. And so when they kind of critique it and talk about it, it's very realistic. You know, as somebody who went through art school, there's all these little details that are very true to life, down to like how they sharpen an art pencil. Like you use a razor blade, you don't use a pencil sharpener, you use sandpaper to sharpen the points. You use sandpaper to get like a charcoal dust to dust it onto the paper. So I really enjoy it. And the other thing I really like about it too, my last thing, is that I kept bringing up the idea of discipline. And this book really talks about that. Like, he has to be such a disciplined person to push forward and achieve like his dream. And I think that's something that I think the way we perceive people who are in the art field and even the humanities field is this idea of maybe like a slacker, or you don't know what you're doing. But the people that I have met and who I know are still working in the field are extraordinarily disciplined in what they do. You know, I think sometimes they work harder than me as a librarian, where I can clock out at like 5 or whatever, and they're in the studio all day.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Actually, God, you're taking me on a roller coaster, because totally sold me. That's very beguiling. I'm not a fan of series because I want it to be a finite world, but yet it sounds like a real journey. Would you say it's a Bildungsroman? Or Bildungsroman?
Like a coming of age story?
Through from innocence to experience. I guess it is, really.
Yes. I think it spends less time on like maybe some of the more personal aspects, although I think there is some stuff about like family, and focuses more on career, I guess, career or like passion.
I think Bildungsroman means, like, if I'm saying that right, it means like just going from innocence to experience.
Oh, okay.
Or more experience, like an educational journey.
I see.
I
think I interpret it as like the development of the whole self too, including like, you know, family, personal stuff, like coming of age.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you wrap that up, because it would be cool to have a book like that on a required reading list. I mean, I'm sure it must be in some school system somewhere, some teachers doing this, putting manga or
I hope so.
Lists, like, kids would be like, wow, or just, that's exciting, or that's new, or that's interesting. And I love the idea of the art aspect. First of all, I'm fascinated with artists and people who pursue it. And I love the guest artists, like you said, will be the artwork of the mm-hmm. students, and makes me want to see it. Is it like a big format or just like the small paperback manga? Like where you
the small paperback manga. Yeah.
Okay. So it's mm-hmm. all pen and ink kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have like a lot of manga. I feel like maybe they'll have, this one has like maybe a couple of pages at the beginning in color, but the rest of it is in black and white. So you can get kind of a sense of like what it looks like in color. Yeah.
Okay. So definitely the book I read was, can be called a building sermon. Like definitely takes the character.
I'm going to Google that right now.
First, don't stop Googling. Just listen to me. First person narrative takes the protagonist from innocence to definitely hard won experience. So, but the quote I'm going to read, the passage I'm going to read, to see if you can guess, maybe you've read this book, because I did read something that would be familiar okay. with reading lists, college or high school, late high school, college, that has
late college
less to do with what I just said and something to do with another character in the book. Okay. So I was half afraid. However, the only thing to be done being to knock at the door, I knocked and was told from within to enter. I entered, therefore, and found myself in a pretty large room, well lighted with wax candles. No glimpse of daylight was to be seen in it. It was a dressing room, as I supposed from the furniture, though much of it was of forms and uses that were quite unknown to me. But prominent in it was a draped table with a gilded looking glass, and that I made out at first sight to be a fine lady's dressing table. Whether I should have made out this object so soon, if there had been no fine lady sitting at it, I cannot say. In an armchair, with an elbow resting on the table, and her head leaning on that hand, sat the strangest lady I have ever seen or shall ever see. She was dressed in rich materials, satins and lace and silks, all of white. Her shoes were white, and she had a long white veil dependent from her hair, and she had bridal flowers in her hair, but her hair was white. Some bright jewels sparkled on her neck and on her hands, and some other jewels lay sparkling on the table. Dresses, less splendid than the dress she wore, and half-packed trunks were scattered about. She had not quite finished dressing, for she had but one shoe on. The other was on the table near her hand. Her veil was but half arranged. Her watch and chain were not put on, and some lace for her bosom lay with those trinkets, and with her handkerchief and gloves and some flowers and a prayer book all confusedly heaped about the looking glass. And then it goes on to say how creepy it is. What does it sound like? What do you think? I know someone listening out there knows it. I know it.
I think I know it.
Right.
I feel like I should ask more questions about it to see. Okay. What is it contemporary 19th century, 20th century? Oh. What's the time range?
It's 19th century, okay. 1800s.
Okay.
High Victorian.
Oh, I don't know what that means, but okay.
Well, Victorian.
Let's see. Is the protagonist male?
Yes.
Hmm.
As they usually are in those days.
Would this book have come out in the periodical chapter by chapter perchance?
Yes. And I didn't even know that until this reading of it, that it was first written in installments in the magazine. So the mm-hmm. author wrote it like chapter by chapter, and it would sometimes change depending on the reader's opinions and viewpoints. So I have a comment about that later, but yes.
Frank, you can't see this, but I'm grasping this computer because Blue Period also came out, I think, in a magazine first, in like installments.
Oh, you're not cheating and Googling something. Or you're doing this from your head. That brings
but I think
just extemporaneous from your head.
I think I've read this book. Do you want me to guess it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think it's okay. I just had a moment of doubt. I think it's Great Expectations because it sounds like Miss, what's her name?
Havisham. Yes, it's Havisham. Correct. See, you did get it and you predicted that you would get it. I wouldn't. And I would be mad, but I'm not. Yes,
I will say my initial thought because of the looking glass was Alice in Wonderland, because there's a second book, Alice in the Looking Glass or something like that. But then when you start to describe the wedding outfit, which is pretty iconic. Yeah.
I was going to go on, but I thought it would be too long about how he looks closer and all that she's wearing is actually not so white. It's very yellowed with age, and mm-hmm. then the mice are eating the wedding cake, and I picked that quote because like when I first read it, and I can't remember, shockingly, if it was high school or first year of college. I thought it was high school. I thought it was 13, but that seems too young.
I think it's high school for me.
I can't remember, but I remember loving it, but I remember being very fixated on the Miss Havisham character, mm-hmm. who in the book suffers a heartbreak, who's jilted at the altar, basically, and stops everything, stops time, essentially. Like, she never changes out of her wedding dress. Obviously, she was dressing when she found out she was being jilted, so she only has one shoe on. And just the imagery of, like, the one shoe on the table and her only wearing one shoe, never changing her veil and just letting her hair grow around it, and like the dress degrades, and that the wedding table with the cake and food just left there to rot with mice running through it, which Pip, the protagonist, mm-hmm. sees, is such a great character. It was so evocative, especially the sort of idea of broken heart. Like, she first says to Pip, she touches her left side of her breast and she says, like, what am I touching here? What am I holding? And he goes, your heart. And she goes, broken. I mean, her first line is basically just that. It's just like, she says, broken. Guest appearance from our construction guy.
What a scene for him to walk in on.
I know. I'm like, broken. They must have been so I just was so beguiled by it. And so I thought I would reread it. And I thought it'd be perfect choice in terms of like the required reading or what classic mm-hmm. required reading and stuff. And it was a really interesting experience. And I definitely, of course, you know, X many years later, from a teenager reading it to now, obviously a different point of view. Like, first of all, I was, so that basically, if people don't know, it's like, it is this sort of young boy in modest circumstances. He's a poor kid, and through a series of events comes into great money, and then has therefore great expectations are made of him in terms of becoming a gentleman. It's very much about class. I mean, very much about aspirations and the various things that come in his way, not least himself and his own emotional makeup, to achieve those expectations and become a happy, fulfilled, rich person. So what was I going to say? Oh, so I forgot about I didn't remember the aspect that Charles Dickens wrote this, wrote in serial form, like that, mm-hmm. so that it would change like chapter to chapter, depending on the reaction of the readers and the feedback he got from publishers and other writers, which figures heavily at the end, how he ended the book, which I found fascinating. But also, what I forgot about was all, because I don't think I cared as much about it when I read it then, and I don't remember it, and I sort of didn't, I don't want to say care, but I was sort of like, that's eluding me, that humor. Because each installment was meant to be an entertaining installment and keep you wanting to read every day or every week the serial was published. It follows a format, like each chapter has a sort of comic moment, like a comic set piece with buffoon characters. And then it advances the plot. So the comic set pieces always sort of sidetracked me. Like, I wanted to get back to the drama of Miss Havisham or Pip's love for Estella, who is Miss Havisham's adopted daughter, Ward, and some of the other characters. But it sort of takes time out for comedy, because basically these serials were like the sitcoms of today or the streaming mm-hmm. shows we watch today. People were that intrigued by them. I mean, it was the only game in town that you could get in your house, or at least read in the library. I mean, I read a little bit about it, and they said like there were many people who go to the library just to read this magazine with the story in it. Mm-hmm. And even mentioned that the story was surrounded by ads for like household products and stuff because they could sell that way. It's like, just like TV and things are today with ads and stuff, like watching videos online, like getting ads. So it's like the same thing, just written, which seems so much more dear to me than watching a TV show in some ways. But so, I mean, we've been going on and on about all. Well, I've been going on and on about. My God, Dad, I feel like I have to hustle this story. But well, the producer can edit it.
Take your time.
Choose what she likes. Because there's so much you could say about this story. Yeah. I just gave that background about how it was written, which I didn't know. But Pip, Dickens really does write beautifully. And there's so much wisdom in what he writes. And so much, I think, very human, what you'd almost want to say modern commentary, which is such an insult to people of 200 years ago. Because, of course, they thought like we didn't and realized what human life could be like. And to say like insights that you find in this book seem modern is sort of irreverent, really, because it's sort of like, of course, they saw the world around them, and authors especially can then describe that feeling. Meaning, Pip at the beginning, his name is Philip, but they call him Pip because he couldn't say his name when he was a baby. He's being raised by his very mean sister and her husband, Joe, who's the sweetest guy in the world and a very, very much a figure of goodness in this book. Pip is very, from the get-go, Dickens gets you right away. He's wandering around the marshes near his house, and it's a graveyard, and it's dark and gloomy, and he runs into this escaped convict who scares the bejesus out of him. And that encounter sets in motion the plot. And later, when the convict is caught, the townspeople go follow along with the police just for excitement. I mean, just to see like what the convicts are about. Like, it's interesting, like the public's allowed to tag along just on a manhunt for this like escaped convict. But there's a moment that I'm just giving an example of Dickens and writing and also foreshadowing that you might not catch the first time you read, is that they find the convict that Pip ran into at the beginning, who the convict had said to Pip, you're going to get me food and you're going to get me a file so I can cut the chains off my feet. And Pip does that, terrified all the way through. And he does fulfill that bargain and then goes back home, and the convict runs off. And then, as I said, the alarm is brought up that there's an escaped convict, and the cops go after him. And Pip and his dad, in quotes, Joe, follow along. And so they encounter the caught convict, and Pip is desperate as a 7-year-old to sort of indicate to the convict, like, I didn't turn you in. Like, I didn't give you up. Like, I'm just along for the ride and with my, you know, father figure here. And because Joe is his sister's, his uncle, I guess, but he's like a dad. So he tries to get that across. And so there's a moment where Dickens writes during that encounter, Pip has been riding on Joe, his dad's back. I had alighted from Joe's back on the brink of the ditch when we came up and had not moved since. I looked at him eagerly, meaning the convict, when he looked at me, and slightly moved my hands and shook my head. I had been waiting for him to see me that I might try to assure him of my innocence. It was not at all expressed to me that he even comprehended my intention, for he gave me a look that I did not understand, and it all passed in a moment. But if he had looked at me for an hour or for a day, I could not have remembered his face ever afterwards as having been more attentive. And I love that I didn't understand what his look was. Pip didn't understand the convict's look, which when you look back, because as everyone knows who's read the book, that convict is basically the guy who then becomes wealthy and gives Pip all the money. Spoiler alert, that sets Pip on his journey as to be a gentleman. And Pip thinks it's Miss Havisham who has given him all the money and wants to believe it's Miss Havisham because Miss Havisham's ward, Estella, is beautiful and Pip's age, and Pip's madly in love with her. So when you look back, you realize in that moment, the convict is looking at Pip like a savior. He's saying, this boy gave me food and, a file to cut the chains off, and he didn't turn me in, but Pip didn't understand it. He didn't know if he did understand. And I love that sort of exchange that can change a life. And that's when the convict, Magwitch, his name, decides to help Pip become a gentleman for his kindness. And also for some selfish reasons, he also likes the idea of creating a gentleman, but that's another story. I'll focus on the nice part. because everything's complicated in life. You don't get it one way or another. But that I love that. And Dickens even writes about it later where he says, I mean, beautiful quotes. Another thing about, he exhorts the reader and all of us to sort of look at a day in our life and see if that day went differently, how differently our life might have turned out. Not in terms of cataclysmic events, but like even small choices made or small moments made. I mean, that moment that I just discovered when I reread my notes, the look of between the caught convict and Pip was the moment. Now you realize Dickens gave to us where Magwitch was like, I'm going to give this kid money. I'm going to make it happen for him. And if I can ever make it happen for myself, if I get out of this, and he's determined to do it. I didn't intend to talk so long about that moment because there's so much in it. But anyway, I just love that. When you look at the writing, when you look back at the writing and how much is there for you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's so much here in terms of human nature. I mean, you know, it's from Pip's first person point of view. And I didn't remember this either when I first read it, that Pip is very, he's not like the greatest kid in a lot of ways. He's like, he's very self-deprecating and he's very funny because he's also writing to us. He's telling the story from his older vantage point and he's being a little bit more self-deprecating and kind to himself. But he's also honest about the fact that when he does go to Miss Havisham's through a series of events, he realizes his poor state and he realizes how common, as they say, he is and how he doesn't want to be that. Mm-hmm. And he, like I said before, he rejects, he starts rejecting emotionally, even though he's conflicted and conscious of it, his dad, Joe, the simple, good-hearted blacksmith, and he feels guilty about it, but he just has to let go of Joe because he's common and he wants more. And when you read it at an older age, it's sort of like you realize like all the stuff we're beguiled by and all the human impulses of survival and getting resources and becoming something is so important to us. And that we almost, like we say, we look back poignantly because our perspective has changed. And we also, our values may be more in line. How we even reject our own parents sometimes. And like you look back, you think, oh, how cruel I was to my mother when she was saying this to me when I just wanted to be cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to be part of the in crowd or I wanted to try for something and my mom was being whatever to us and we rejected that. And then it hurts us later. It's like the same thing that happens here. I mean, Pet goes through a real ordeal of getting this money, having great expectations, losing a lot of the money, and being tempered by life and realizing it was just like about, you know, the kindness of that man who raised me and another friend of his, Herbert Pocket, who's a very enthusiastic, cheerful guy, you know, middle of the road, talented, that Pip feels superior to because he's like, he's just a goofball. Like he's just, you know, a puppy. That's also just a nice guy. So he's his friend. And that's the thing. He can be his friend and respond to those qualities in Herbert, but yet still feel superior and feel and one up in his own head on him. Like I'm better than you because I'm serious and I'm in my own head and I can think. And you're just like a happy-go-lucky kid. And then of course, by the end of the book, when he's more mature and goes through some reversals, he realized Herbert was just a good guy. Who always was there for Pip, and he realizes I was an idiot for thinking he was less than me. And that's also like something we can identify with. I mean, there's so much here. And what I said about the ending and how Dickens went about it is that Dickens ended it, I thought, you know, right up my alley. He encounters Estella. Estella is the beautiful girl in Miss Havisham's house that he falls in love with, who's, side note, raised by Miss Havisham because of her own jilting to despise and break the hearts of men. That's a whole other story, conversation about what that abuse really would look like. And also, can one really do that? Can you manipulate someone's brain to become what you want them to become? But it's an interesting concept. So Estella is very cold, very dismissive, but Pip, again, like I've been talking about, the theme of this, falls in love with her regardless and even realizes I'm falling in love with this girl, against every feeling I have, against my possible happiness, rationality, which says a lot about human nature, is that he wants that beauty. He wants what that beauty means. Mm-hmm. He wants that class. And it made me think that maybe as human beings, we're just automatically organize ourselves in hierarchies. Maybe it's just human impulse rather than this, we say society, because human beings are society. We create it. It seems like we always organize ourselves in a way that, like, we either aspire up or want to push down. I don't know. So at the end of it, he basically encounters Estella, who's in and who has had reversals of her own. She marries this very rich guy who just abuses her. Mm-hmm. And she meets Pip in Piccadilly. And, you know, they both realize they've come through it, and they've realized they were wrong about a lot of their aspirations. And Estella especially has suffered and realized, you know, she was not a nice person, and she was victimized by Miss Havisham, but just she's sadder and wiser as he is. But they part. And colleagues of Dickens were like, the public wants them to get together. Mm-hmm. They have to end in the clinch. They've become wiser. They've suffered. They have to come together. But Dickens still, so the official ending was not the one I just told you. The official ending is which I love, sort of, they meet in the ruins of Miss Havisham's house, which there's a big fire in Miss Havisham. Spoiler alert, it's killed in it. Mm-hmm. So they meet there, and it basically indicates, even though Estella's sort of like, oh, I hope we can be friends, and she's genuine, Pip's like, yes, he basically says, like, there's no need for us ever not to be. And so it's sort of like, oh, there's a door for them to be together, but also it could also just be a coming to terms of minds that, yes, we've both been through it. We've both learned, but it might be, just like in life, not possible for us to get. So he leaves it ambiguous, but a little more positive than the other ending, which I'm glad that Dickens sort of wanted to show that Great Expectations, that our expectations can turn out not the way we think they are, that we might learn the things, of course, that we didn't expect we would learn. Like, he thought he'd be a gentleman and happy, but what is that? Like, what is being a gentleman and happy? It's like, what is being happy? God, it's a whole other conversation. He goes through life, and life knocks him like life does, and he's learned the value of certain things, like the love of his family and other things, and his idiocy and his own personal culpability in his life, where he was not a nice guy and should have been better. But he's learned those things, and that's the most valuable thing he's learned. And that means the most to him more than anything else. So his ending up with Estella is beside the point to me. It's like, not about, unbelievably for me, it's not about that romantic fulfillment or that ending in a church and a happy ever after. It's about the personal, intellectual, emotional growth of this kid. Mm-hmm. And Estella as well. And you know, but I do love a poignant ending where it's like, you know, but maybe we are not meant to love, kind of thing. Wait, so anyway.
So you said that was the official ending. Did the book and the, like, the serialized installments have different endings?
I believe the story is he wrote his ending, which basically indicates they're not getting together. And
yes.
A famous author, I can't remember who it was, read it and told him, you have to change it.
Got it.
You can't leave the public after all this with them not getting together. So Dickens rewrote it that indicated they would be together. I could read it to you, but I'll just tell you. They would be together, but you don't really know, are they going to be together just like as souls who've learned something through life, or as partners, romantic partners? It's a little bit vague, which is Dickens' way of saying, I don't really want to just end it in a church with them being like, yay, we're happy. Because he did keep the line in where he tells someone that he's over Estella, and he means it. Like, he's like, it's done, that's past. But I guess contradicting myself, because when we all say, oh, I'm over it, sometimes that means we're really not fully over it, but we're somewhat over it. I mean, he's not the same kid as he was when he first fell in love with her. It is tempered with experience, and he doesn't look at her the same way. But yet they have that history, that history together, which means something. So they've both definitely learned, but whether they end up together is up to the reader, really. So Dickens doesn't give that to you, which I like. But he did take the advice of his colleague, like, I have to make it a little more hopeful so the audience can at least read into it.
Mm-hmm.
He says something like, at the end, that there was no shadow of parting over them anymore. Like, meaning there was no danger that they would ever be apart, but yet you could sort of analyze that multiple mm-hmm. ways, like soulmates, or they understand, like how you understand someone, but you don't see them in a daily way. Like, you sort of come to terms with someone, yet there is no day-to-day life for you two.
Mm-hmm.
So Great Expectations, darling.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Ooh.
One, the whole like serialized installment thing in what you were saying earlier, like, you know, I do think it's interesting because I do feel like a lot of young people are actually still reading in that kind of fashion through like Wattpad, through webtoons, where things get released in like weekly, sometimes monthly installments. And so that kind of form of reading is very alive and well, which I think is kind of fascinating to like tie that in. And I think that could be a great entryway for teachers to talk about these works too, right? And compare it to what's happening now. You know, the Miss Havisham, if there's an R in there.
Havisham.
I do think it's, you know, continually interesting, the depiction of these like women kind of like in addicts who have gone mad that we always see in these works, and wondering how those stories be told from like the woman's point of view, like we saw with like Jane Eyre and like Why It's Sargasso Sea, if I pronounced that correctly, yeah. too, and how it's like so very different and how those kind of like play together. The other thing that I thought was, I mean, definitely both of our books are about like ambition, right, too. But this idea too of in Great Expectations, that rejection of like personal history in order to, I guess, for him to like move up, you know, whatever that means, and also kind of having to lose all these aspects, and very kind of like a non sequitur. But I've also started reading this book called Native Country of the Heart, I think is the name of it, which is this memoir by Cherry Moraga. And again, apologies if I'm mispronouncing the name, but I haven't gotten very far in it. But so much of that book is like seemingly contextualizing her own identity as a person through her mother's story. And I just like, it just made me think about that in comparison to this book, where it seems like you have to really reject the thing that's made you who you are. Like, he's yeah. Pip, right? Because yeah. of his family and how yeah. his family has raised him so that he can get the gains of seemingly like money, status, this woman, et cetera, and having to reconcile that.
It's so interesting to me because I always try to think of what's elemental. And that word is used in this book a lot. Like, maybe it's part and parcel of being human to some degree. Of course, we have these developed personalities that coincide with our animal impulses, because we are animals, of course, mm-hmm. that is bound to reject what came before to become your own person. Mm-hmm. And then maybe the journey of humans is to learn that. Because I can remember vaguely when I was younger, that sort of terror of not becoming.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't become what I wanted to become or didn't get what I wanted to get, it was terrifying. And I forget mm-hmm. that terror because as an older person, I don't feel that scared anymore. I'm more or less done or set mm-hmm. in some ways. And that's a scary thing, like to gain, like, you know, I mean, you reduce it to the cliches, but the cliches have truth. Like, you know, Pip wants money and he wants class. Mm-hmm. He wants power. I mean, and Estella wants the same thing. Mm-hmm. She wants to marry. She wants to get resources. Like, he's attracted to her beauty. She's attracted to men with money. It's like the classic, like, resources and beauty and like what men and women's impulses are, but like this sort of like basic thing. But yet we have these evolved psych brains that can sort of think almost a lot of times to our detriment.
Mm-hmm.
I think is what you're saying exactly. It's like how we sort of convolute our own lives.
Well, I also wonder if there's a kind of age factor in this, where I think with young people, like you are trying to break free of maybe your family to become your own person. And that's why I think so much of YA literature is about that, becoming your own person, searching out your own identity. But I think as you get older, maybe there's this idea of like wanting to go home, like finding that connection. Yeah. As you age, as your parents age, as your family ages, right. And maybe, you know, for him, it's like just age is a big factor in terms of him coming to grips with some of
that. And that thing of expectations, like you're like, oh, if I only just get this, I'm going to be happy. Like you're 18 years old going to college, like, all right, I get my degree. I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to find the best partner. Like, yeah, then I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be happy. And then you get married and then it's like, well, we'll have kids and then we'll be happy. Or I'll get the next promotion. It's like, then I'll be happy. It's like, you're always expecting. And then when you go through it, you realize happiness was like, yes, of course, money's all that's important. But like you look back and you have a different perspective, like, oh, if I could have just enjoyed the moment. I mean, that's what's made a lot in Great Expectations too, about the moments we anticipate or expect to be great moments. Like when Pip really believes Miss Havisham is his benefactor and that he's made, born to marry Estella and inherit Miss Havisham's money. He's so filled with joy. But at the same time, and this is so human, he's filled with doubt. He's not good enough. He's common. Will he pull it off? Is it true? And I always, when I read that, I thought, how human is that? Like in the moments we anticipate to be our happiest moments, we're always surprised that there's other feelings there too. Like, you know, you look forward to your wedding day and you're getting married and you're happy, but then you're also worried or tired or confused or, you know, you have a pimple on your face and you're like, it's ruining my day. You know, things you don't anticipate. It's almost
And also the question of like what comes after, right? Because it seems like those are
after.
It's like, oh, I want to be a doctor, but then you become a doctor. Then what's next, right? Because you don't really necessarily think about past that point and how like life continues on. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, now I just find pleasure in the fluttering of leaves outside my window. I don't want to be the superstar of the Western world anymore. Madonna will take care of that. But I mean, yeah, I love it in a way that you said it, that our books were similar, and they are, because they I have to apologize for my frosty cancerousness. You actually,
what's that frosty? It was so heated.
Well, yes, yeah, true. I'm just pulling bad words out of my hoo-hoo. But you did pick a good book that actually should be on lists, considering what it's about. And they are similar in terms of these required reading books, like Catcher in the Rye. I mean, a lot of these books are about becoming people, like kids becoming the people they want to be, or how they're thwarted in that. And I love it.
I think we were pretty simpatico, even to the point that we're both wearing light blue shirts. Have you noticed?
United and it feels so good. Do you know that song? Reunited.
Only through you.
It's Peaches and Herbs from the 70s. Yes, we are wearing blue shirts, blue period. No, blue, what is it called?
Yeah, it's blue period. Okay. Yes. It's different kind of period than Lily.
Great Blue Expectations. Mm-hmm. Let's just put it in there. Blue's Clues. That guy's back.
Oh, he is back.
It's all blue. Am I blue? That's a song. We'll keep the singing to a minimum. This is going to be an editing masterpiece. Oh, sorry. Oh, she almost forgot the ASMR people. We almost got away scot-free, but not this time.
Can you hear it, though?
Let me see. Either you're whittling something or you are peeling an orange. Now you're trying to get out of a tiny little box. Now you're brushing your hair really too hard.
I wish I had the cricket here to help me.
Are the crickets quieted down? Look,
the cricket's gone.
I guess they're at lunch. I don't know. It sounds a little bit like whittling, like you're taking an object. Well, and rubbing it against another, which is everything.
Technically correct.
What is it?
I like that you think I have whittling tools here.
Crystal Ten, the whittler. Oh, it's almost like an orange.
It's what are those stress balls?
Like a Nerf ball.
Yeah, it was. I think it rolled out one of our take home book kits. I don't know which kit it belongs in. So
what were you doing to it that made that noise?
I was like scratching it like this, and then I was squeeze. Did you hear it when I was squeezing it?
I did actually, like the little pff of air. I did
Yeah.
And then it morphed it. You morphed it into the scratching with the nail. At first, I heard that, and I thought it was like, just, I don't know, the on ramp to the ultimate noise you made. All right. She's squeezing a Nerf face ball. Thanks, Crystal.
You're welcome.
Thanks to the ASMR delights. We should probably maybe set up parameters about, here I am with the rules again. I'm so not rule oriented, I think, about how you make noises. Like,
what do you mean? I use my nails.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if it, or then if I always know it's your nails, then I'll know it's.
Oh,
not
no, no, no. You have to.
Objects.
You have to, like, right. Let the objects make the full spectrum of noises.
Fine. I'm, like, getting very busy cleaning up my area here because I'm done. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for this endurance test. And that's actually the point that was made about Great Expectations, is that Dickens at one point says, after all is said and done, all one can do is just endure, and how you do that. So basically, every listener out there who's still with us, you just did that. You endured. You endured through the grief, the good times, the tears, the laughter, because we basically brought all those emotions, or at least I felt every one of those emotions since the beginning of this podcast about 16 years ago. Anyway,
don't forget the anger.
It's simmering. I'm going to just trash my office after. Anyway, so next time we'll read what we please and discuss it with each other. And thank you, everybody, for listening truly. And have a great week.
Thanks for listening to The Librarian Is In, a podcast by the New York Public Library. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcast or Google Play, or send us an email at podcasts@nypl.org. For more information about the New York Public Library, please visit nypl.org. We are produced by Christine Farrell. Your hosts are Frank Hilarious and Crystal Chen.